Most financial advisors follow the industry playbook. Elite advisors choose a different path. I'm Sten Morgan. Welcome to the Elite Financial Advisor Podcast, where top advisors share the strategies, mindsets, and the stories behind building a better business, adding more value, and the courage to grow through resistance. Because becoming an elite advisor is not about working harder and longer. It's about choosing a better path.
I was dead ass broke. I didn't have any money, and I sold product because I was trying to maximize, you know, income to just survive. My hat off to everybody out there that's just surviving. I tried to position myself as a library of information. Ask me any question, I'll have an answer. And then I got so overwhelmed, I said, I'm a librarian, not a library. What if we could step out and say, no matter where you're at, metaphorically, look at your life, dump your ingredients of your soul out and add back what you want to be, how you want to be, and what you want to do, and who you want to do it with. I can't think of a better time to be a financial advisor. I think it's one of the very, very few things that is not going to be AI'd away.
Welcome to this episode of the podcast. Today we get to hang out with Omani Carson, a legend in our business. He's accomplished so much. He started as an advisor like a lot of us did. Scarcity mentality, grinding it out, just work hard. But over time has built a massive advisory firm. But also his personal story is inspiring about how he's changed and how he's grown. So I'm looking forward to sharing this conversation with Omani with you. Let's jump in. Omani, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me, Sten.
Yeah, I was excited and a little nervous for this because there's so much we can talk about and there's so much you've contributed to in the industry. And for everybody listening, you probably heard of Omani, but there's a lot to look up and research. But I almost wanted to start with, as I've reflected on all the things you've done that are public information.
Yeah.
And even recently, some things you've been talking about. As I look at my story, there's times where I feel like I've lived some really distinct chapters or lives. And I look back at the current version of myself, and it's interesting to reflect back. So I'd almost love to jump forward in your story to like what today is shifting in your world, what perspectives are changing, and then we can take it back a little bit.
Yeah, that's I love your question, Sten. And it's so timely and relevant because I'm 61 years old, and you know, there was a point in my life to give some context to my belief was that we were in a world that no matter who you were or where you were, hard work, if you just worked hard, you could have a great life. And I think for most of my life growing up, at least in the United States of America, that was true. That you woke up and you gave effort. And you could really pretty much dictate the life that you wanted. And I start looking around and realizing, first of all, and Buffett says it, you know, Buffett's right here. He says, you know, I was fortunate to have won the Ovarian lottery. That literally won the greatest lottery of all time. And I used to say this in my talks, that imagine being able to, with all of the probability to be human, to be born in the United States of America, to be in our profession where we get to help people and really have a great life at a time that change is accelerating. And so it's really powerful, right? It's a really powerful lottery to have won. And, you know, what breaks my heart though is we have plenty on this planet for everyone. And that story is not true in many parts of the world. And it's not even true here in America anymore, which breaks my heart. I was doing an interview with a young reporter from New York City, and his fiance has a great job. He has a great job, and they cannot afford to buy a house. Think about that. Working in New York City, two professionals, college degrees, cannot afford to buy a house. So what's really alive for me today is social justice. And I believe that we're on this. And listen, I've benefited from the system immensely.
Yeah.
But I think it's incumbent upon us to figure out, you know, how do we, and I'm a capitalist too. So I don't believe in socialism. I don't believe in communism. I am a capitalist, but I'm a conscious capitalist. I believe in conscious capitalism. John Mackey and Raj Sasosa really, I think, coined that term. And I'm really, you know, what's really alive and present for me today is different ways of literally our systems have to change. I look at, I'll just give you a great example, healthcare.
Yeah.
I mean, I never run into anybody saying, God, I love our healthcare system. Isn't it the best? And some of our community members have launched a new model that is like, whoa. These guys started a company, became insanely successful. It got away from them. They exited for billions of dollars and then started over. And they are getting tremendous outcomes. They actually are in the Medicare program because they started with seniors first. Their cost of delivery is 42% less and their outcomes are 5 times better. And it's all around preventative, all the things that we know to do.
Oh, yeah.
Having a navigator help you navigate the system, get out in front of it. And so that's a long-winded answer to say, you know, I really devoted my, what's alive for me is meaningful system changes. Our food system's another one.
Yeah.
We spend so much money. We poisoned our food with glyphosate and atrazines. We've destroyed our soil. These are things that like, everybody wants to go to Mars. Let's take care of this place. And as I'm speaking, I'm from Omaha, Nebraska. It was 77 degrees on Monday. It should be like 5 degrees this time of year. The last 2 years we've had weather in the 80s. It's killing our crops. I mean, we're getting torrential rains and then we're getting drought. And I mean, we learned this in COVID, right? You don't go to the grocery store to get food. Someone's got to raise that food before it ends up there.
Yeah.
And I feel we're teetering. We've got this polycrisis environment and metacrisis, which are, you know, they're closely related but distinctly different. And for the first time ever, I'm noticing people like myself are like, I want to be involved in making some meaningful changes in the way our planet's operating.
I love that. Thanks for sharing. I do think that tension you mentioned. So I grew up outside of Portland, Oregon, but I'm in the world of finance and money. And I felt like this weird tension of like, I believe, you know, in capitalism and the system and there are truths of like fiscal responsibility and truths that you can't argue with, that this stuff, it works this way and this way it doesn't work. But then growing up where I did, it was like this social component of balance and it's not about just make as much money for yourself all the time. It is like, hey, consider others. And so I feel that tension being a financial advisor and a business owner of maybe it feels like there's two camps at times or multiple distinct ones. So I'm like, I feel the tension that you're talking about of like, both are true, kind of. How would you explain that better?
I love the way you said that. Because let's go back to, like, first of all, capitalism has done, the economic system of capitalism has done more to raise the baseline of humanity around the world than any other thing, period. And I think it was Milton Friedman wrote about this in the 70s. He said, you know, the sole focus of capitalism is to maximize profits for the share owners. And that's where I think it went way off the rails is coming back to John Mackey started Whole Foods. Raj Sasota is just a brilliant man. He's written many books on this topic. They're like, no, it's a piece of it. But there's all these constituents, you know, the internal stakeholders here at Carson, we call those, you know, people call them employees. We don't call them that. Internal stakeholders, external stakeholders, which are all the people that we do business with. And we don't want to have agreements. We have an alignment. We truly want to have alignment with internal and external. We don't have a true alignment because agreements, you can disagree and you can all compromise, but alignment is you really believe in the same things. Where conscious capitalism can align with profit, can align with internal stakeholders, align with external stakeholders, can align with our community, and also can align with nature. And here's the thing that people believe these kinds of things come at a huge headwind, and they actually don't. In the short run, could you make some less profit as you balance this out? You could. But ultimately, when the ecosystem of conscious capitalism is working in harmony, mm-hmm. it provides more for everybody. There's even more profit that is made when you can look out over a period of time.
Raise your hand if you've ever been to a financial advisor event that didn't really change you. Maybe the speakers were interesting, maybe you had a few good conversations, but when you got home, nothing about your business actually improved. I've been to a lot of these events over the years. Events full of inspiration, but short on practical strategies you can actually use. The advisor of the future knows how to clearly communicate their value, prospect with intention, and deliver financial planning advice clients actually understand. That's why we built How to Charge Live. This isn't an event built around hype or theory. It's an event built for advisors by advisors. 1,000 advisors have attended How to Charge Live, including advisors with more than 20 years of business experience. And over, we hear the same thing. This is the best advisor event I've ever attended. I want to personally invite you to join me at my office in Franklin, Tennessee this October for 2 days focused on helping you build more valuable business. I'm going to walk you through my entire process, how to communicate your value well, how to add value through fee-based financial planning, and how to create a framework to help you scale your business faster. Seats are limited, so visit howtochargelive.com to secure your seat now.
How would you now go back in time and talk to Omani when you were, I'm thinking of myself as a 24-year-old financial advisor. It's like, I got to hit the marks. I got to win the trips. Like there was this, I was in this more of kind of warrior stage where maybe I didn't even feel like I had the luxury to think of the bigger world. I'm like, I'm surviving. I'm trying to buy a house. I have kids.
Yeah.
What's the coaching now to that version of you knowing that you need to make money?
Yes.
There's a grind component to it. This industry is about incentives and things. Like what's a way for all those listening that are like, Omani, I'm still in it. Help me, but please still give me permission to be successful.
Yeah, I love the way you position this because there are people that are going to listen to this and go, well, it's easy for you to say because, right?
Yep.
And listen, when I started, I was dead ass broke. I didn't have any money and I sold product because I was trying to maximize, you know, income to just survive. And my hat off to everybody out there that's just surviving today. But I would take a step back knowing I can't give this advice without knowing the environment we're in today, right? So it's not given in a vacuum. But when I look at the forces that are in play today, I can't think of a better time to be a financial advisor. I think it's one of the very, very few things that is not going to be AI'd away. However, and I just talked to someone yesterday. He's in a financial forum group with some of the largest RIAs, and he just said they have not invested in clean data to really maximize. Did you see the Altruist when they released Hazel, what it did to like LPL and Schwab? And
yeah,
I mean, and Jason sits on our board. We were the first check actually in Altruist.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, way back when this was an idea. The reason I'm sharing this, because it's so relevant to the question you asked, is never have the opportunities been this great for a relationship business. Hmm. We are going to more than ever crave the human connection. And that's all we're going to do as advisors. I mean, it's, you know, it's like I'm a pilot. It's these planes can take off and land themselves, but we still have two pilots up there.
Sure.
Because when it comes to your life and when it comes to your financial life, you don't want to chance it to technology only. You want an advisor that can hold your hand, walk you through it. And I believe that's not going to be disrupted for a long time. And then step in front of the fact we don't have enough financial advisors. We have close to 100 trillion. It's just here in the U.S. I think the number is now 86 trillion in today's dollars. It is moving right now. I mean, we are seeing, we've grown faster in the last 90 days than the first 30 years.
Goodness.
Think about that statement.
Wow.
We're doing it because we're attracting young advisors. We've got older advisors. We're able to layer in these capabilities with technology that we never thought possible. And there's going to be a handful of major winners And ultimately, our cost to serve, we will be profitable below our competitors' cost to serve because of the massive investments we made. So back to the advice of the young advisor is align yourself with a place, really do your due diligence on, are they prepared? Because imagine something that's going to be infinitely bigger than the internet. That's I spend hours every week now with, you know, one of my business partners, that's all they're investing in is AI. They've made huge amounts of money in it, but they really know what they're talking about. Our community is full of AI, you know, people that are living in this world every day. And even they have a hard time grasping the change. Even Opus 4.6 that came out. Mm-hmm. And it even surprised, even though it's 2 years or two versions old, because they're keeping tight, you know, their newest stuff because they want their competitors. It's definitely not open source. And so I would say be aligned. My neurosurgeon here in Omaha, I saw him at a fundraiser a couple months ago, and I said, hey, is AI going to replace you? And he said, no, but it's going to replace doctors that don't use AI.
Nice.
And it's the same thing. You know, be aligned. I ran into a gentleman out in Colorado. He came up and said he had read my book. He said, you know, what advice would you give? I said, what are you guys doing around AI? And he goes, nothing. I said, get to a place where they are, because it is going to be that big of a huge advantage for those advisors to have these tools.
Yeah, well, I think through, like, as I give advice to young advisors now, there is an element at times of like, hey, join a large firm because they have some systems, they have some training, versus like going independent or kind of a boutique right away. But a lot of times those bigger firms seem to move very slow, like resistant, slow to adopt. And I'm coaching a lot of those big firms and speaking at some of their conferences, and there's something in the air, but then there's also at the advisor level this frustration of like, we've heard this before. We're 5 years behind anybody else. I mean, are the people you at your level that you're talking to, like, no, they're figuring it out and it's coming sooner than you think? Or is there going to be this stall in our industry where others feel like they're adopting it, but the financial advice business is...
There's a few in the financial advice. I mean, I look at... We've invested heavily at Carson. I believe in attraction over promotion. So this is not a sales pitch at all. But I'll tell you, the reality is... If you saw what Danny Faba is doing here with AI, it would blow your mind. Jason Wink at Altruist, you know, as a custodian, what he's able to do, and what, I mean, Hazel was a good example of that. Our version of that is Steve, you know, here at Carson, where can you imagine being in a meeting where just as you speak, everything is being picked up, categorized, cases being sent off, and things are happening without you having to do anything?
Wow.
Imagine that, and opening accounts in a few seconds, not in a few days or a few hours. So this is there are companies we have not even heard of that are going to really benefit from this. And the good news is, for a lot of the advisors out there, our older clients are very slow to switch. Right? They don't. Sure. But I would also remind them that we're in this period of massive transference, and older people. I'm seeing this happen more than ever. It's like, it's just too much for me to keep track of. So I'm going to turn it over to my niece, my nephew, my brother, my children way sooner than I would have, because I feel there. So you're going to lose the fact that you have a relationship with the decision maker could shift very quickly. So I just believe assets are going to concentrate. And I looked at the banking industry back in the 80s. You're too young for this, but in the 80s, we had 60-some thousand banks. Do you know how many banks today control more than half the market?
Less than 50?
Five. Five control like 60% of the market. The same thing is, and by the way, AI is going to further consolidate that. It's also going to consolidate financial services. We've been so slow to move for so long, and so many of the systems are archaic. They've got desperate systems that have not, you know, they don't communicate with one another. And this is going to be a massive hindrance for competition in the future. And for anybody listening to this, I tell you, a podcast I listen to, there's two I listen to every week. Facts versus Feelings, which is Sonu and Ryan, which they are great. And even if they weren't here, I'd still listen to them. I just got through right before I came on with you. And Moonshots, which is Peter Diamantis, Dr. Alex Wisner, Grossman, Dave Blunden, these guys, and they have amazing guests on, and it will blow your mind, you know, just about what they're talking about and what's possible. And it's going to impact everybody. There's not going to be a single person that's left untouched from the shift.
So my general sense hearing you talk about it is like, this is a good thing. It's going to open up opportunity. Be aware of it. Try not to be left behind. Do you sense that it'll change the most important skill sets of financial advisors moving forward? That is it less about knowing the content and having this firm name behind you? It's more about being a great communicator. Tell me if you were an advisor now and it's like, hey, if some stuff is being streamlined, it's less valuable or needed than it was, but the advisor of the future looks like this.
Burt White, our CEO, says, and I love this, he goes, you know, we're all trying to figure out what's going to change in the future. Let's try to figure out what's not going to change. And the relationship, the need for sitting down with an advisor, doing a FaceTime with or a Zoom with an advisor is going to be premium. I mean, you hit on it, Sten. Communication skills, relationship skills. I remember one of the best books I ever read when I got my CFP, and it was a small paperback, Communication Skills for Financial Advisors. And that was a Bible. I read it, reconsumed it, and then I read everything I could on where to sit, how to communicate, cadence of my voice, how do you lean in, how do you pace the energy of the people in the room. And the better I got at that, the better I became at persuading people that this was the place to be. And I would invest in those skills heavily today, because people are going to realize it's going to be impossible to differentiate yourself purely on a value proposition. Where you can really stand out and shine is being that trusted advocate in the way that you communicate, the way you make people feel. And there's a lot of science around this that we can learn.
And I found as my confidence grew over time, I think I had this anxiety early on of like, I need this client in order to pay my bills and I'm willing to do whatever you need from me, until it's like, actually, no, I need to lead this person better. And even some of my most successful business owner clients that could be the most intimidating, they kind of want to be told what to do.
Yes.
They want a confident advisor that has a system that won't deviate based on that person's feelings. But I do think the communication piece, we're trying to lean in on that heavily with a lot of coaching we're doing, kind of whiteboarding. The gift is simplicity. Can you take something complex and deliver it in a simple way? But then that brings me also to, if it's not about AUM, even though it's a great line of business, because how's AI disrupting that? If it's not about insurance, because algorithmic underwriting, and someday somebody clicks a button and they're approved in 5 seconds. I'm feeling this internal pull of like financial planning, a comprehensive system that if you're a product focused advisor and your financial plan is about Monte Carlos and managing money, or more insurance and estate planning, I'm like, it feels like this more comprehensive experience is needed. What would you say to that?
Yeah, I think that the old AUM model, everybody still reports it. Internally, we talk about net revenue, and which takes in, you know, doing the taxes, the tax planning, estate planning, but you know, the comprehensive planning. And I believe that is invaluable. And AI, again, I was just telling this, I said, we're in a big competitive position on a really large opportunity. And I said, I want you to imagine we've got this data warehouse with all your data in it, and we have AI agents in every discipline working on your behalf. We have a rich environment where we can constantly be on top of what your situation is, but any opportunities that unfold themselves. If you're, and they were going to a place that wouldn't be able to do this, it's a big, big name, mm-hmm. and they're like, oh my gosh, you're right. Matter of fact, I got someone referred them the day before they were going to sign the paperwork.
Oh, wow.
And I end up having a call. He put it off for a week. I just heard yesterday he's coming to us. So this was something that we ended up, you know, again, he said, what really hit me was, and as a question I had for the firm I was considering going to, is how have you leveraged AI? And they said, oh yeah, we leveraged. Well, give me specifics.
Ooh, yeah.
Like, what have you done? And that's what they were unable to do.
What answer do you think they gave them?
Yes, you know, we use, you know, ChatGPT and Gemini, and we have access to that. And yeah, it's like, no. Like, what have you done with data? And where do you store the data? And how quickly can you consume and leverage these new tools and AI agents that are becoming available? And that's where they were, they're light years behind. They couldn't even have the conversation with them.
As an advisor, I'm always curious about what is the path that most people don't choose. It may be the most difficult and challenging, but it will get me to my goal faster than everybody else. So we are launching Elite Plus. This is the community for advisors that really want to engage. You get to hang out with me a couple times a month live, asking questions, trying to grow our practice together. You'll get for free our financial planning software that'll help you deliver a better financial planning experience to your clients. You'll have access to Q&A cohorts with other advisors, and you'll have our full library of resources. This is for you if you are ready to go all in. If you want to be challenged to grow, you need to come hang out in Elite Plus. Join the Elite Plus membership today. Visit gobeelite.com and experience the program that transforms advisors into leaders.
In your story of growing your firm, some kind of hockey stick moments, I'm assuming there was a time where like new clients were not lined up out the door. The flow was not so massive in the momentum that like, hey, we just have natural referrals coming in. Now we got to learn how to manage those referrals. What would you say to the advisor now that's like, I just need plate appearances. Like I'm struggling getting people's attention.
Yeah, it's hard to get people's attention. And this is why if I were a young advisor, unless I had a massive bankroll, I would align with someone that lets me just do the relationship stuff. And that's the thing I didn't have the luxury of doing because I was a small independent. I was trying to buy systems. I was trying to figure out how they would work and how they would run. Back to people want to be told what to do, but they want to know that you're very competent, that you've got a competent team. And I would say the first part of my career, Sten, I tried to position myself as a library of information. Ask me any question, I'll have an answer. And then I got so overwhelmed, I said, I'm a librarian, not a library. I can find it. I've got a great team. Yeah. I'll be your point person. And people want to be told, what do you recommend? Can you imagine going to your doctor and they're saying, here's all these books, read it and tell me what you want to do, right? We don't want that. We want someone to confidently say, you know, here's two options that you have. And the other thing that I think is important for advisors is don't accept anybody. Something that we always said was for the benefit of our existing clients, we only accept a limited number of new clients each year. AI is going to allow your capacity to grow exponentially, but also, you know, there's just any advisor that is saying, I need more at bats, just put yourself out there. Get rid of, we used to do this thing where I'd give points for different activities because I did a study. My highest producers, those producing, this was 25 years ago, a million or more, had very specific activities versus those that got consumed with the minutia. And if it's a numbers game, hone your communication skills, have a value proposition that is very compelling. What I could tell people, no matter where I ran into them, is I'm not asking you to give me your business. I am asking you to let me give you a second opinion. Mm-hmm. And the only way I would ask for your business is if I can show you beyond any doubt that I can give you considerably more value than you're receiving. And it was almost always true on the planning side. On the investment side, it's, you know, trying to capture a little bit of alpha here and there. A lot of advisors sell performance. And when you get into their, you know, how sloppy really their tax return and the planning had been, you could show a tremendous amount of value. And then I would say, if I feel that I can give you considerably more value than you're receiving today, I'm going to be politely aggressive in asking for your business. I said, and wouldn't you love if you got a second opinion? And I looked at it and we did this sometimes. I wouldn't change anything. I don't want to replace a relationship because there's so few of them out there that are really performing at that level. Sure. It's really good. I remember one of a client, I said, you know what? I would just stay where I'm at. And they're like, are you serious? Like all this work, you're telling me to stay? And I said, yeah, because they're doing a great job for you. And then the advisor, the wife said, I don't really like our advisor. And so So they ended up switching anyway.
Sure.
But they loved the fact that I said, I wouldn't leave. I wouldn't move because they're doing, there was virtually nothing else we could have done any better. But that happens, you know, one out of 20 times, yeah. You know, not one out of five.
Yeah. When you think about your firm today, I think the dream for advisors is we don't create a really busy job for ourselves. And I think I meet a lot that, you know, work hard, they're serving a lot of people, but they don't understand teams. A lot of advisors don't see themselves as leaders. We don't know how to hire well. And it's this posture of just like kind of brute force, work hard, don't give up, stay in the arena. I don't know if that's the healthiest though. When you think holistically of their life, what would you say to those advisors? I think that's maybe the biggest group that's out there right now.
I remember Dan Sullivan, the guy that has Strategic Coach, said something that really hit me. He said, you know, if you work on your weaknesses someday, you're going to have a lot of strong weaknesses. And I would say to advisors, figure out what you're good at. It may not be X and Y, and that's where you're spending your time. We have this thing called the blueprinting process, and I ask people to visualize the future and say, if there were no limitations, how would you spend your day? What would you do within your profession and get rid of everything else? And then do an organizational chart of the future, right? What it could look like. And then start filling that in today because you're doing a lot of things that you don't love to do, which means you're probably not that good at it.
Yeah.
And I just had very few things that I could do, but I could do them well. And that was building relationships with clients. If you're not great at building a relationship, I would start with what's going to make you happiest. Go into this creator mode of, you know, so often we live in this either savior, victim, perpetrator role of life. What if we could step out and say, no matter where you're at, metaphorically, look at your life, dump your ingredients of your soul out and add back what you want to be, how you want to be, and what you want to do and who you want to do it with. Eliminate friction in your life, and then you will find that role. You know, just doing something because I'm going to make some money. And I can say this because I did it. I would drive, you know, 6 hours in order to make $200, you know, on an account because I was that desperate. And I had a big accordion kind of file in my trunk of my car where I did all of my own paperwork and hated it. I wasn't very good at it.
Thank you for admitting to that. We needed to hear that.
They did it. Yeah, I did it all. I did it all, Sten. And I just worked a lot of hours. It was just brute strength and force.
Yes.
And there's just such a, you know, as Buffett says, find a tailwind and get yourself in front of it. And there is such an undeniable tailwind in our profession today. Complexity, movement of assets, people are uncertain about who they can trust. The trust is low just in our society in general.
Yeah.
And every relationship is replaceable and the money's in motion. And so you couldn't script a better environment to be in this profession.
That's encouraging to hear. As we wrap up, I'm curious, your personal work. I know life kind of brought me stuff in the last 5 or 6 years. It kind of forced me into like reflection. Why am I the way I am? What is it like to sit across from me? Doing a 7-day intensive in Scottsdale that just kind of ripped me up and exposed a lot of things.
Where were you at? Where'd you go?
Called PCS.
I did it. I did
it.
I did the 7 days, man. That is hard. I mean, it's like you start at 7 a.m, go to like 9 o'clock at night. You have the individual stuff, the group stuff.
It was wild.
I did it.
For the first moment I got there, I'm sitting in the waiting room looking at 9 other people and I'm like, wait, are these the people that I'm going to sit in a room with? And like, and by the end of it, I mean, you've probably heard stuff that they've never told anybody. And at one moment they did a drama therapy session, which at this point in my life, I'm 30 something. I've kind of accomplished some stuff. You know, I'm still though in that, like I have a facade, a way I want people to perceive me, and I got it together.
Yeah.
And this lady comes in, she is every, you know, stereotypical drama teacher vibe look. And they're like, okay, we're going to pick one person today to act out one of their most traumatic life events or something. And I'm like, oh no. So we huddle up, she puts her hands on all of us and she's like, on the count of five, I want everyone to say a name of who's going to go. And I was like, I think it's, and it was every single person said my name. And for the next 45 minutes, and they had me just crying in front of everybody, but it was just like revealing stuff, feeling things. And after going through that, obviously it helped me in so many ways, but I came out of it like a better advisor, a better leader. But I don't know if I would have chosen it unless I had to do it. So I'm kind of curious what came up with you.
By the way, you're the only other person I've ever met that's gone through PCS.
We'll talk about it another time.
Yeah. Well, this is the work I do today. You know, we launched, we have a healing ranch just north of here, and we use a variety of methods that have been used for thousands of years. And it's pretty remarkable to see the transformation. For me, going through PCS was a grind. And it really didn't move the needle for me. It wasn't until Jeannie and I were working with a lady. Her name was Dr. Bierman. She had a nationally syndicated radio show called Dr. Laura for years. You're probably too young to know this. And so I thought, okay, well, she's a big time. She's written all these books. We were working with her in Chicago. And Jeannie still, you know, works with her to this day. But I wasn't feeling it. And I met Karosh, who I've talked about publicly. He's my business partner now in this company called Omya that we launched. Mm-hmm. And I've probably referred more than 200 people like me over the years. And once he just has a way and he has a process and we're able to, you know, I had my own operating system was fear and scarcity. I was able to replace that with love and abundance. And I'll say this too, Sten. Once I did that work, man, I had such a strong pull. Abundance started to coming at me in such a powerful way because you really will lock on with people that have also done the work.
Yeah,
you can go deeper. You have a degree of trust. It's not a transaction. It's truly a relationship. And even now, we'll have a typical group come through the ranch for like a 4 or 5 day experience, and they'll say, I know this group better in this 4 or 5 days than people I've known my entire life because I've gone deep and we've been radically vulnerable, yeah. You know, with what our stuff is. And there's nothing, there's no judgment, there's no love. There's no love lost in their translation. They know they care for one another. And I mean, it's a forever thing. I mean, I will continue to do the work, but it's freed me from that fear and scarcity mindset that was the first 50 years of my life.
Wow. What would you say to somebody now that you sense they haven't done the work? Obviously, I'm sure you get excited for the work. Like you want others to experience some of this stuff. I find if I come in too hot and I'm too excited about it, you know, they don't know the language. It's
right.
I'm triggering them all over. What's your approach with that? Because obviously you're in a place to mentor a lot of people, lead a lot of people.
We meet people where they're at. So, you know, it's like, what are you comfortable doing? We just had a new member retreat this weekend. I had several financial advisors there and they were crying at the end saying, I never knew I could feel this way.
Sure.
And they were very nervous about what the experience would be. I mean, I was nervous when I went to PCS for this. It was the first time I had done anything like that.
Oh, yeah.
And totally out of our comfort zone. One of my favorite things to ask people is we always do intentional questions when we have dinners. And one of my favorites is, when's the last time you did something for the first time? And that's my message to every human out there is get out there and get out of your comfort zone. You know, what would you do if you knew you couldn't do it wrong, if you couldn't mess it up, and just do it? And that's really the permission we give people, just to come, be themselves, be loved. Let us take you through a process, but more importantly, meet you where you're at, you know, not where we want you to be.
Yeah.
And take you through hold your hand through the journey.
Yeah. I appreciate you being open about your story. I think as I look back at my kind of arc of, you know, single mom, grind it out, as long as you have some money, that your problems go away, to, hey, I want to run a business, to, hey, I think I want people to see me a certain way, to then, hey, maybe there's something deeper, more connection. So I relate a lot when you talk about stuff to the desire to produce, give back, reach my full potential, yet health and balance. And I think there's a big part of my life where like those are two opposing things. And there's definitely some friction there, but it's like, no, maybe there's some place where those work together.
I used to think there was friction there. I used to say that there was some friction there, but the truth is, once you get really pure and you live in this creator mode, Sten, where you're not compromising, you're living in your full integrity because you've decided this is who I am and this is how I'm going to show up, and you revisit that, you remove all friction. Mm. I mean, and it will come at you in such a positive way that you will not be able to tell whether it's Monday or Saturday.
Nice.
I mean it.
That's great.
It is the, and it's not just me, hundreds at this point, probably more than 1,000 people are living that life that they never thought possible. So that's, there is hope out there. If you're willing to do some personal work, get out of your comfort zone, the sky's the limit in how much you can enjoy your life and how much abundance you can bring into it.
That's a good word. Imani, I appreciate you, my friend. This was great.
Hey, thank you. Thank you for having me, Sen. It was great. It was fun.
Talk soon.